You're listening to Around Comics, episode 229, brought to you by InStockTrades.com, Shigure Death Frenzy, and Netflix. From Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week a revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, drop on by. Hey there, folks. Christopher Niesman here. I'll get you introduced to this week's panel. We have pulled out the rusty tricycle once again.
It is rusty tricycle.
It sounds weird.
Sounds dirty.
Dirty, yeah.
Well, it's rusty, not dirty.
Earmuffs, Hank.
That being just the three of us once again is Mr. Tom Caters.
I prefer to think of it as a power trio podcast.
Would that be Rush, the Police, or...
Oh, God. It's nothing. There's Cream. Come on. The Police.
Ugh. Oh.
Ugh. What is this, like some faux reggae we're going to play now?
Oh, man.
Oh, thank you, Tom.
I love The Police. That's, speaking of music, but I'll introduce Sal here first. Mr. Brian Salazar.
Hey.
This is actually a band that I think it's the Brian Salazar stamp of approval. Music for this episode
Herb
features...
Albert and the Tijuana Brass. Again?
Yes.
Again.
Exactly. Oh, you're a mind reader. Yeah. Morphine. This week.
Oh yeah, very good.
I am a fan of the Morphine and a moment of silence for the Sandman. So that was sad whenever he passed away. But no guitar in this band, just sax, bass, and drums.
Yeah, take that, guitar fans.
Kiss it.
All right, well, I'll tell you what, guys, we're going to talk
about... My Rage Against the Machine got some...
That was
some,
cool,
some nice responses. People seem to like that.
And I think that that Rage Against the Machine could give a little bit of wisdom to Vince B. Anger is a gift.
Anger is a gift, that's right. Vince is way too nice.
I think we should have like a month of just like Canadian folk music. Just like some really soft, like Anne Murray... Just some laid back, something a little laid back,
a little mellow. Yeah.
Next week, footsteps, footprints in the sand.
Yeah, or just you know what? Every musical break should be Gordon Lightfoot.
I like Gordon Lightfoot.
I do too, and that's why we need to have more.
You know, you're going to get a pick one after tax season. Whenever you're ready to really dig back.
It'll just be Kanye. Just be Kanye.
All Kanye,
all the time.
Just like the same song, though.
Talk about a maniac.
Well, I tell you, let's not forget to mention our wonderful sponsor, InStockTrades.com.
Ding.
InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders over $50 do, in fact, ship for free. And right now, Tom's book club pick, The Adventures of Luther Arkwright.
I just finished rereading it.
Yeah, I've got to finish it up.
Man, you guys have no excuse.
Well, no, we're recording that in 2 weeks. I got 2 weeks to finish it up.
I'm just telling you.
No, I'll come in prepared. I'm taking notes.
I'll make it up.
If you at home, loyal listener, would like to play along, you can pick that up at InStock Trades for an amazing 45% off the cover price. It can be yours for the low, low price of $10.42. That's at InStockTrades.com.
It's black and white, so it's arty.
It's black and white. It's crazy, dense, insane.
It's going to change the way you look at the world.
I just put it in InStock, order. Couple weeks ago, expecting in the mail, but I also was talking about this week the Things from Another World. It's their annual.
Yeah, what is with pimping them? You got they paying you on the side or something?
No, but
I wanted to mention that I ate a delicious Subway sandwich.
Let me lift up my
Sam Adams, Boston Lager, Samuel Adams, is one of the finest.
No, I got finished out my Lone Wolf and Cub series. They had them for like $4 a piece.
All oh, nice.
The Dent and Scratch. So because those are normally like $10. So I was like, ah, crap.
So how much did you spend total?
$375.
No, I got that, and I got the Sin City the library edition or the art. Yeah, I picked that up for $60.
That is 12-foot long sandwiches.
And, yes,
toasted.
You're just wasting money, man.
Yeah, you're just wasting money. Could be delicious.
I'm saving sandwiches. Money. I save so much money. All right,
yeah, but are you saving it if you weren't going to buy it?
I would. No, I've been looking for that for a couple of years.
Yeah,
now.
That's like my wife. It's like she, you know.
But I saved all this money.
But you didn't need a potato peeler and three new mops. You really,
always
you
use know. Mops. You always need mops.
Yeah, I agree with her on
not
that.
Not if you don't clean the floor.
Except my. I was going to say my wife comes home and said, "Honey, look how much money I saved. I bought you these mops." I'm like, oh, thanks.
Well,
you are the woman in that relationship.
Oh, hey, I'm not disagreeing.
And it's weird because it's not a progressive relationship either. You're like the woman from 1956.
Oh,
in that
absolutely.
Relationship. It's
I wear an apron at home.
You're farther behind than like Lois Lane. She had a
she was a responsible dress, member of.
Yeah, she was contributing newspaper stories.
I roll over, man. It's terrible. Hey, what's
let's get off this.
Let's stop talking about what a woman I am and talk about some comics.
All right, fine.
If you insist,
Tom.
Yeah,
you've been chomping at the bit. You actually you manned up this week. You were at the beginning of the week. You're like, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to do this. It's tax season.
I'm exhausted.
Then you had a cup of coffee and you're like,
yeah,
fuck it.
It completely changes my viewpoint. Well, you've seen me before and after coffee.
Yeah,
like
amazing.
Before coffee, I'm not gonna show up. I'm never gonna get anything done. I had a cup of coffee and I was like, oh, that's such a defeatist attitude. And I know if I didn't talk about it this, I would just not talk. You know,
yeah, if you didn't talk about it now,
it's like a month later, and kids are already reading the next thing.
Yeah,
the next volume of like Fruit Bats or whatever is gonna come out.
Fruit Bats.
Whatever weird manga. So the kids won't be paying attention. So
Fruit Bats. Yeah. Copyright.
Fruit Bats. I'm sure there's already a book called
Fruit Bats. Volume three.
This one changes your mind about.
Yeah, what were you looking at? I received a package today from
Gold Digger.
Who sent that?
Let's look at the envelope. It was sent FedEx ground.
Santa Claus.
Cheap bastard.
Santa Claus.
Sent it?
It is from Paul J. I don't want to say his full name.
Okay.
He's from Canada though.
Oh.
You know this book is expensive.
Yeah,
it's like $50.
Is it? Oh my god!
It's the Gold Digger.
Are you sure that's not Canadian?
Brick.
No, Canadian. It's 80.
Oh, I was gonna say because $50 Canadian's like 12 American.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you decide to use their money, I don't. I go there and.
But no, Paul.
American cash.
Sent me some original English language manga called Gold Digger. So thank you very much, Paul. I will try and get into Brandon, who's over here in the peanut gallery tonight, has given me apple seeds. So I've got a lot of manga stacked up.
A lot
up
of bad stuff to read.
You didn't know there was so much about Johnny before, did you? Johnny Appleseed.
Johnny Appleseed, year one.
Year one.
Let me see Gold Digger.
Good Lord,
the gold brick.
Johnny Appleseed, year one.
I'm gonna that $50. I'm gonna read that and send that back to him.
Well,
I feel guilty now.
The thing with Johnny Appleseed you gotta keep in mind is he has a dark past. You just don't go around spreading apple seeds because you like it. You gotta be compelled.
Okay,
it's a passion.
It's a passion, and often passion comes from a twisted past.
All right,
Gold Digger is a unique blend of humor, adventure, and science. It's fast-paced and full of action in exotic locales like the Garden of Eden, Shangri-La, and Atlantis, just to name a few.
Jesus Christ.
Well, Tom, let's talk about something that you're passionate about, and we've known for a long time that the Flash is your favorite character, and this is something that I think not just Flash fans, but just DC fans in general have been looking forward to for over a year since this thing was announced. But Flash Rebirth has finally been released, and
dropped.
It dropped a couple weeks ago, and we've been chit-chatting about it a little bit. The world awaits your ruling.
You're putting a lot of pressure.
Well, you are the foremost authority on Flash comics.
Yeah,
I think we've established that.
Hey, if there's a new Queen and Country book that comes out, people are
we will come to you to ask.
There's a Flash book, and Tom Caters is the Flash guy.
Nobody comes.
You
to
have
me
a podcast about this character.
That's true. You want to be the expert on something?
Not really.
All right, yeah. Okay.
I don't need that kind of.
I liked it.
Okay.
That was a. All right.
Sal, what have you been reading?
No.
I mean, it wasn't perfect, but I guess I don't know what a perfect first issue of a miniseries would really be. I mean, there's to get the bad out of the way, I think there was a little bit of stiff writing in there, and I think the art didn't help at times because the art was a little stiff, and it sort of accentuated the stiffness in certain sections.
Which isn't good for a kinetic sort of character.
So that's a little, but overall, there's stuff. There's enough stuff in there that I'm extremely intrigued, and I liked how they did Barry. You know, it's sort of in a way I think a lot of people are disappointed in the series, but I think they're disappointed in the first issue because everyone thought in their own heads they have an idea of what
it was going to
of
be.
What Barry is like, but it's a, you know, it's a fictional character. You know, I see a lot of people say stuff like, "Oh, he's never been this serious," or he's never been, and I was like, "Well, no one's written a story with him now in 30 years. And I think I really liked it in the sense that it wasn't Barry coming back and like giving everyone a hug and then they go off to like go fight Starro, you know, at the end of the issue. And
let's go fight crime, chum.
Because it's called Rebirth, like Green Lantern Rebirth, obviously the fact that they named it the same thing is going to draw comparisons between the two. I mean, it's inevitable. They're the two things called Rebirth. They're the two Silver Age characters.
Writer,
it's impossible not to draw comparisons between the two.
Sure, it's like naming any DC book Crisis.
Yeah,
Crisis,
there's, but I also think that in the story, it's very clear that Barry, the Flash, and Hal Jordan, Green Lantern, are two extremely different people. They're two very different characters, and I think bringing them back, I don't think you could do the same type of story with Barry Allen that you could have done with Hal Jordan, because Hal Jordan was always around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people say he wasn't Green Lantern, but I mean, he was the Spectre for years. He was always around, and he was always in my mind, miscast as a lot of different things that he wasn't.
He existed for a long time in the post-Crisis DCU, where Barry did.
Yeah, and I think it's a little bit of a challenge between the two characters, because I think when Hal came back, for a lot of people that were fans of the character, it was cathartic because you kept seeing him be things that you didn't want him to be.
Yes.
And now he's back, and it's easy to... that whole series is like a celebration of, you know, how awesome Hal Jordan is. Mm-hmm. And this series has to be something completely different, I think, in a way, because the way Johns has always written the Flash characters and the Flash family is it's like a family business, where the dad passed away and the son took over. And for a long time, the son, you know, Wally had to try and live up to the idea of what, you know, his quote-unquote dad was, you know, and Barry was very much his dad. So the dad comes back, and I think the uneasy feeling in the book is very much, that's the cool, interesting part of the story is that, yeah, everyone is uneasy. Everyone isn't quite sure how it's supposed to work out. Together. Yeah, how is it supposed, you know, how, if you've established yourself as something and you're a grown man and you're an adult and someone comes back who you've built your whole life, what do you do with that then? Do you give up what you are? Do you, and it's obvious to me too that Barry is in denial about coming back. He doesn't want to see his friends. He doesn't want to see his wife. He doesn't want to connect with anyone. It's going to be mean to my dad, but it reminds me a little bit of my dad. My dad is someone who doesn't like birthday parties. He doesn't like anyone celebrating anything about him because his whole obsession is like his job. And he never sits still. If he comes to visit me in Chicago, he's got to go for a walk around the block every once in a while, or he's got to be doing something. He's got his own personal momentum that like carries him through everything he does.
He
doesn't slow down for anything. You know, he doesn't stop to, you know, let anyone say that he's doing a good job. He doesn't let anyone be like, "Oh, maybe you should retire." You know, my dad is never going to retire. He's never going to willingly stop. You know, and I read Barry and I was kind of like, that kind of just reminds me of my dad. You know, like my dad, Barry doesn't want to, you know, he came back and someone has his job. What is he,
That's supposed you know, that's to one do. Thing. You know? The just from a logistics standpoint, the DCU's kind of full of speedsters right now. You have three people with the name Flash, and then you know, please explain to people that maybe are spoilers ahead. I guess
for a story.
How the hell is Bart back?
Oh, he came back and he's back alive in Legion of Three Worlds number 3.
Which I knew that.
And I mean,
but,
that's at some point he comes back. I mean,
right.
Obviously, he's in the book.
Yeah, they just kind of drop that in there. It's like, there's the guy that they made such a huge deal of him being dead for the last year. And
well, I think they very much want to forget about that for good reason. Yeah. It, you know,
it was
like
not good.
They've reset Bart back, and you know Bart comes back, and he wants everything to be the way that it was, and Wally, you know, obviously wants things to be the way it was. And it's who wants this guy comes back, and people want to celebrate the thing that he was. You know, they want to have parades and everything for him, but nobody's like that. No modern character is going to live up to that idea. And
I thought that was one of the more interesting parts is when he comes back and he goes to the Flash Museum and there's this huge celebration.
Yeah.
He's there out of costume, just sort of walking around, taking it in and really feeling sort of out of place, looking at this, like you said, celebration of the last 30 years without him and what his memory has become. If you want to look at it sort of meta, you know, metatextual of like, he's become a much bigger character than, you know, what he thinks he is, and seeing everyone sort of like
he even says everyone's overreacting. I don't understand why everyone's doing this.
And you have Hal there, sort of going, "Oh, lighten up, you know, enjoy it."
Yeah,
you know, don't almost like playing. You know, to me, it was almost like that moment where, because you see it all the time, where like you know a character will come back in comics that's been dead, and it's like, "Oh, hey, come on, let's just go pick up where we left off."
Yeah,
and nothing, you know, because that's all it sometimes is. Where this was, you know, Barry feeling like there's a reason he's back, and he only has a certain amount of time to accomplish whatever that reason is, whatever the reason that he's been brought back for what he thinks is a short amount of time, he has to do something about it and not waste time celebrating something that doesn't really matter to him.
Yeah, I also thought it was interesting in that the two of the more stiffer sections, you know, the part where Jay is talking about how important Barry was to the Justice Society, which when you look back at the old books, it's true. And then Wally talking about it, I read it differently. Like I read it like it was juxtaposed to the fact that Barry can't live up to that stuff. Like this is the problem in the book, you know, is Barry. Is he that big of a person to all these people, or have they just remembered him as being that big of a person?
Right.
He's come back, and he never got the Dark Knight treatment. You know, this is the first time we've seen him in with a modern touch to the character. Even in modern times when he's been written, it's always been like, oh, Barry shows up to save the day in two panels, but it was always Barry from the past, and it was always it's not him now, not him having been dead and realizing that he's been dead and coming back. So
I think the other thing too is, I mean, if you look at his death, you know, to think about how he may think of that moment as more of a failure.
See, that's interesting.
Than the sacrifice that we all attributed to it. You know, I would imagine he probably looks at it sort of as a failure.
Well, to
some point.
To get super nerdy, depending on how much they want to talk about what was happening to Barry before he died in the book, was that the last time he saw any of these Justice Leaguers is when they were voting him out of the league for killing Zoom. You know, he died alone. He didn't die with everyone else. Like, he left because there was nothing left for him when he left the first time. Like, he isn't on good terms with a lot of them the last time. I don't know if they'll bring that up. They might just skip over it because honestly,
it's John's. I mean,
John's might touch on that.
He may not bring it up, but it may be a part of it. I mean, yeah, and I mean, to kind of go even deeper into that is like, well, you know, when somebody dies, all you remember is the good things, you know,
yeah.
And that happens all the time. So everybody's sort of treating him in that way of not even remembering that probably or not.
Yeah. We'll be right back.
production of Around Comics is brought to you by Netflix. Right now, you can start a free 2-week trial by going to www.netflix.com/aroundcomics. At Netflix, you'll find over 100,000 titles to choose from, including classics and new releases, as well as TV series. Plans start from as low as $4.99 a month, and you can keep each movie as long as you want with no wait fees, ever. Netflix has free shipping both ways, and you can expect your next selection to be delivered in about one business day. Now watch some movies and TV series over the internet for no extra charge. I use this service with my Xbox 360 and personal laptop and love it. So head over to www.netflix.com/aroundcomics and get started with your free trial today. He knows honey's coming back. Honey's gonna want some more angel food. Devil made a honey. Devil made a honey. Devil made a honey. Devil made a honey. Well, as this shakes out, you're kind of getting back to the overload of flashes. You know, how much room is there, and you know what flashes do you think are going to be around? You know, obviously, Jay is going to stay in the JSA. It looks like Bart is going to have his spot in Teen Titans.
Maybe they'll just
or whatever.
Kill Barry again at the end.
Maybe.
I almost feel that way. It's like, so I don't know that Barry's going to stick around. If he, you know, is he going to stay around?
Yeah,
I don't know. It almost felt like maybe not. Like it's not. He's not going to be around for all this time. Forward, but I don't know.
I guess in short, I liked it because it wasn't what I thought it was going to be, which I think is where most actually really interesting stories come from. I think sometimes people get really hung up on that. They want a story to reinforce what they already think about something. Yeah. And if that doesn't happen, they feel that it's wrong. But I think that's a little.
In some ways, it's kind of odd because, I mean, it is like, you know, okay, bringing Barry back is such an odd thing to do because to me, it's like, well, what's the point of bringing Barry back other than to please Barry Allen fans?
But I don't think there's a huge amount of Barry Allen fans that were sweating it so hard about. See, that's the. To me, that's just the weird thing with it. I mean, I think it's a weird story.
Well, I think part of it's the costume. It's like, well, Wally may be the Flash now. To the layman, it's like whenever you saw Kyle Rayner, Kyle looked different than Hal. It's like, well, that's not the Green Lantern I saw in Super Friends.
Their belts are different, Chris. I know their belts Jesus are different. Jesus Christ. But the boots are different.
But you know what I'm saying is that the costume is similar. Yeah. So there wasn't that, well, that's not my Flash. It's, you know, after a while,
I think it's going to be fine. Mm-hmm. I think I've seen a lot of people saying, really, it's interesting to read reactions to it almost more than to the book, because you see a lot of people say that's not how Barry is, and I'm like,
well, how is Barry?
How is Barry? You know, like, what is?
It's not how Barry was when you were reading him in the Silver Age, but he's been dead. The character, if you want to look at it from a fictional character standpoint, he's been dead and disconnected from reality for 30 years.
I think it's interesting. I think
you can't say what he would or would not be.
Yeah,
like
it's a little, it's odd. But I enjoyed it, and mm-hmm. of course I'll keep reading it. It's best Flash book I've read
in a while.
It's years.
You know, Sal and I had an interesting discussion about what they could possibly do moving forward with the Flash, kind of making it a book where it picks up different stories about the different Flashes. You could have a Barry story for 3 weeks, and then a Jay story, and then a Wally story. Would be a way to keep them all on the map and in Flash, which I think would be an interesting way to do it. And, you know, almost like the Spider-Man Weekly, almost, where you could have different Flashes and different storylines.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens, because, I mean, it is you at some point you think, well, there's going to be some sort of shakeout, and one of these characters is going to get...
The music is going to stop, and someone's not going to have a chair.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just they're either going to be sort of left to the wayside, or something really weird will happen to them, and, you know, Wally will be a villain or something. You know what I mean? Like, something odd will happen to one of these characters. But, I liked it. It certainly wasn't what I was expecting, and I didn't I didn't go crazy for the issue. I really didn't care for the art so much on it, but it wasn't what I expected. I thought it was interesting. I was kind of just hoping that it wasn't going to be maybe as serious as it was.
Yeah.
I guess I was just kind of hoping for something a bit more fun. Well, but I guess that's hard to do off the bat. I mean, you know, it's
he
like
he does rag on Hal for his fighter pilot jacket.
Yeah, he does do that.
This is the first time someone told Hal that jacket looks stupid.
Time to retire the jacket, Hal.
But I also think I don't think it's as serious. I mean, the parts where Barry's talking about, he does seem excited that the world does move faster.
Right.
You know, like it's exciting that people, you know, can communicate faster and everything's moving faster.
Hal's like, oh, it's terrible. And
I think
he was like, oh, it's awesome.
I think it's weird. It's a weird story because it's a character that most comic book fans who, you know, read DC Universe books know about but haven't read a story about them.
Yeah, I don't really have much of a connection to Barry Allen. I really don't, because I grew up reading Wally West books and that character, and Barry I've read some, but it's not, I mean, it's not a character that I have much of a connection to.
I just think it would be weird if he came back, like I said, if he came back and hugged everyone and they all just ran off to go fight. I would be like, huh.
Well, I think for me, it was more like, it wasn't even so much Barry's part in this book. It was sort of the subplot of the whole, like, serial killer out there killing with the Flash.
Wand.
It was just like, that seems odd. I mean, very gruesome and odd and strange, but we'll see what it goes on with it. I don't know, but I don't know. It was certainly interesting, and I'm interested to see where it goes forward. I was, you know, like I said, I wasn't blown away by it, but it was
the first issue of the miniseries. So I'd rather
the last one be good.
Yeah, exactly. I'd rather start off with a slow burn and build up to a nice finale than, you know, start out. You know, it's the event problem these days. This is the first issue of an event. It's awesome. And then it just kind of goes downhill after that. So I'm hoping it's the inverse here.
Well, let's talk about something else.
All right.
I've been thinking too much.
Thinking too much about
I've been
Flash.
Thinking about this book. All the time.
Constantly.
Yeah, constantly. I'm sitting at my desk, wishing I could move faster. That's really why. Tell me about running out of time. Trust me, I know.
I picked up the new Warren Ellis miniseries from Avatar.
Nice.
More of his really nice work going on at Avatar with Warren Ellis, and then Garth Ennis is doing some stuff. And we're
Does it have that nice Avatar smell?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, smell, like, snuff, snuff.
Like an ashtray.
It smells like an Avatar comic. This is it is Ignition City, written by Warren Ellis and illustrated by Gianluca Pagliarani.
Of course.
Of course. Yeah, exactly.
It's a European.
It's a European, yes. And it does have kind of a European feel to the art. The art grew on me as I was getting it. And actually, I think the art did get better as the
issue book went along.
Progressed. Nice. Your basic setup, and this is what appealed to me right off the bat, is that it's Berlin, 1956, is when it opens up, but there are crazy airships floating around.
Oh, that's always a good sign.
Yeah, exactly.
Dirigibles.
I need to go back and read what was Rocket the other book, Etheric Mechanics, and see this may. Whoa. It wouldn't shock me if this is like some kind of shared universe.
I don't know the way he ended a theory.
Yeah, but the whole idea of alternate reality and period piece, I love that mixture. And this is mid 1950s, and man. Not only has already been in space, but seems to have gone there regularly, and is not as much anymore. There are apparently,
boring. It's empty. Space is empty.
Yeah, yeah. It's there was a space race. There isn't anymore. And as you get into the book, you start to think that, or actually, it's pretty much revealed for you that there was an alien influence at some point that changed the course of history as we know it. That is
God.
That's the setting for the story, but it's really about a woman who is a pilot, former space
an
pilot.
An aviatrix?
An astronaut. And she is not able to do that anymore because of what's going on in the political landscape of the world. But that's where the book kind of takes
very clumsy handling.
The book takes a twist at that point where you think it's going to get more into the world politics of stuff, and she finds out that her father has died, and so she goes out on a journey to recover his body, which takes her to this very Mad Max-esque post-apocalyptic looking spaceport called Ignition City, and you get introduced to some of the cast characters, and it really did. It took a Mad Max twist to it that I really love. That this is a spaceport that apparently it's the only operating spaceport in this part of the world or whatever. That's it's not really important, but these are kind of the dregs of the former scum. Astronauts and it's
the
very
most isolated.
Very most isolated. Yeah, there's even a drunk cosmonaut who seems like he's a real dirtbag, and
they usually are.
Drunk cosmonauts, but no, it was a lot of fun.
No offense to those sober cosmonauts out there.
Yeah, her getting into Ignition City and seeing what this town is going to be like as you get introduced to the different characters, and she is apparently getting ready to find out some not so nice facts about her father, who she hadn't seen in like 8 years. So it's a 5-issue miniseries, and nice first issue. Enjoyed it. I like the stuff that Ellis is doing at Avatar.
Yes,
and with Freak Angels, he's got this nice post-apocalyptic and alternate reality vibe.
That's where all the good Warren Ellis stuff is.
Yeah, exactly. It's I think that he's very free to kind of do what he wants, which isn't always the best thing with Warren Ellis. I think he can be a little unhinged sometimes, but I think he's reeled it back to set a pretty simple story. Whenever I first got into it, I was afraid that it was going to be too big, and then limiting it to this microcosm of Ignition City and getting it much more back on the ground, I think is going to make it more of an interesting character study as opposed to, you know, his kind of wild techno fantasy that he gets into. So no, I really enjoyed it. So
techno fantasy.
Be prepared. It is an Avatar book. So you're gonna
$26.99.
You're gonna be eating that $3.99 price tag on it. So
I should be used to that.
Mm-hmm.
Get over it, people.
Yep.
Jesus Christ.
So yep, I dug it.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. What do you have, Sal?
I have a book I was surprised that I liked.
Oh, you're so goth.
I know, I'm so goth. Dead Romeo, number one, ooh, out of DC, is by Jesse Blaze Snyder, who I'm guessing is D. Snyder's son, because I think he did some comic book.
With a middle name like Blaze.
Yeah, I'm thinking, I don't know, I'm assuming
it's
that's
not
D.
spelled
Snyder's.
The way you think it is. It's B-L-A-S-E. No, I'm kidding.
No, it's B-L-A-Z.
Like fire!
And penciled by Ryan Benjamin, inked by Salim Crawford. It's, I didn't know what it was about at all, I just... Mm-hmm. Decided to read it out.
So, the name.
Yeah, Dead Romeo. I'm like, oh, it's kind of a cool name, and it had a really cool looking cover. I assumed it was a vampire thing, which it is, but sort of a different take on vampires a little bit. It's basically
love
about
story.
So far not really a love story. Not so much. It doesn't really go down that road typically. I mean, you know, like how you maybe would think it.
It's not Twilight.
Yeah. No, it's not Twilight.
Oh,
Tom looks disappointed.
Sorry, I apologize. It's basically about a character who is a vampire who's brought back from the dead, basically. In this first issue, you sort of it starts off with him, you know, coming out of the grave and being sort of disorientated, not knowing where he's at or who he is, or he knows who he is, but. And running into this little goth chick in a cemetery that he comes out of, and sort of following her into a town, sort of chatting her up and trying to get in her pants because he's Romeo, not the Romeo, you know, but
he's a Romeo,
and he's
he's
from
a player.
You don't learn that much about him, but what you do learn about is he's what I think he was like an 80s hair band guy. And he still looks that way, and he just came back from the dead, and she's making fun of the way he's dressed and everything, and but he's chatting her up nonetheless. But as the story goes on, you find out that he is one of six vampires that are brought back from the dead for a specific reason, and they have a job to do. And that was sort of the different take, is that he's not like a, you know, he wasn't like, at least from what I could tell, he wasn't bitten and brought back, you know, or turned into a vampire. He was brought back from the dead. So he's an undead vampire, but he is, he's being brought, he was brought back by like a demon, sort of. And he's sent on a job. He's, you know, he's not just back to go fuck around and drink blood and that kind of stuff. And this isn't the first time.
Hang out in nightclubs.
Yeah. It's not the first time that it's happened to him. And so he sort of has to, meet up with these other vampires, that were all just brought back for the same job that they're on. And that, I mean, that's really the basis of the first issue. There's not a whole lot there other than, you know, that little story and setup of it. But I really just kind of like the idea of that, of like, this isn't, you know, it's a, he's a vampire, but it's a different kind of thing. He's not, you know, he's, very easily it's set up a character that you sort of sympathize with because he doesn't want to be doing what he has to do. But really what I was impressed with was the art, Ryan Benjamin's art, who I don't know his work, really at all. I'm not familiar what else he's done, but I was really impressed with it in this issue. It sort of had a European feel to it a little bit. And it reminded me of a guy who's done some issues of Scalped, and I can't think of his name.
Oh, the guy who's done the backup.
Yeah.
The fill-in ones occasionally. Yeah. Is it with an F?
Fregredo?
No. That's like Fuerna.
Something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
Kind of reminded me of his stuff, but I don't know. Just overall, I was just sort of impressed with it. I was kind of not expecting it to be... I was sort of expecting it to be very standard shit, and it was sort of different and very violent and all that, but just sort of a different skew, you know, like just a different perspective on it. And I was pretty impressed with the dialogue. I thought the dialogue was good. I thought it was just
good comics.
Yeah, it was just good. I just really enjoyed it much more than I thought I was gonna. Some of the other vampires that he brought back were sort of interesting and you know, very easily you could tell they were much more malicious, sort of violent and
what's hateful. The name of it again?
It's called Dead Romeo.
Would
Dead
you suggest Romeo. Listening to it while reading it while listening to Bauhaus?
Yes,
on repeat.
I don't think it was that. I mean, it wasn't that.
I'm kidding.
You know,
don't make fun
goth.
Of
goth. I think that. Well, that's why I wanted to talk about it, because it's like it. With a title like Dead Romeo, it's about vampires. It's very easy to sort of. I even kind of wrote it off like, oh, it's going to be
Twilight.
Yeah, it's going to be Twilight. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't. It wasn't at all. And I really liked it because of that.
Well, so, nice.
There you go, Dead Romeo. And it's just, I think it's a 6-issue mini.
Well, all right then. Out on the nightlife, early to bed and early to rise, makes a man or woman miss out on the nightlife.
Go on, man.
I don't. Have you guys been reading Jersey Gods from Image?
I read the first one. I haven't picked up the second.
I've heard good stuff about it.
I just read number 3, and I quite enjoy it.
No?
Again, because it's not what I thought it was going to be. Because when you read the preview, I mean, it's a takeoff sort of on the New Gods a little bit. There's like a planet of these two warring factions of these godlike creatures that have had this long history of fighting each other, and they've all got these sort of lofty names and, you know, ones and crazy animals, very Kirby-esque even artistically. It's got like a certain Kirby feel to it. And one of the, now I should really know his name before I get into it. Well, the main guy meets a girl who lives in New Jersey while he's fighting some villain in New Jersey, and they sort of like hit it off. Well, the preview has them married, so I kind of thought the preview from a few months ago was all going to be about them being married, but it's not. Like, the story goes much slower. I mean, at this point in the story, she's still waiting for him to call her from like the first time they've met.
It's
really weird because you have these two really different stories going on parallel to each other. You have this New Gods-esque story of like this
cosmic
epic
war.
This epic civil war. It's got a nice sense of humor, and it's got all the stuff that, you know, makes sort of the fourth world stuff fun. It's like just outlandish. The art is crazy. There's all kinds of stuff going on. But also parallel to that story, you have the story about the girl in New Jersey who's working at a newspaper in the fashion section, and someone stole one of her ideas, and like her boyfriend's dating her best friend, and they don't run into each other. Like they ran into each other the first issue, and you know they're going to come back together at some point, but it's just kind of running parallel to each other, and it's treated with the same drama. Like the drama of the big epic cosmic war is the same of her having her idea stolen by her editor, you know. And it's funny because you have these two very different things. You have like almost a slice of life story going on next to this other story, and you know they're going to collide into each other again at some point. You don't know quite when, because this is the third issue. And since they met in the like the end of the first run, beginning of the second, they have, you know, he's asking his friend like, you know, what's an appropriate amount of time to wait to call her, you know, and she's like, well, when so she's
it's like a rom com, it's like a romantic comedy, but with a new god,
with the new gods, and it's written by Glenn Brunswick with art by Dan McDade. And I have I've been very pleasantly surprised by it. The main character's name is Barack.
Barack.
But with an O, not like Barack. Barack Obama. No. This is not a Barack Obama tie-in. This is not.
Yet.
I'm sure they're going to have one where the female character's name is Zoe. And it's cool because they've also got these backup features at the end that are being written by Mark Waid, with art by Joe Infernari, which tells the backstory of this war between the gods, you know, when it used to, when it happened back then. But it sort of reminds me a little bit of, it's got kind of a Godland feel to it that it's playing off on that. And
with a little bit of the Kirby-esque feel to it.
Yeah, but a little different slant because it's more romantic comedy-esque. But the art is really, I love the art.
New Gods meets Noble Causes.
Yeah, it is a little bit like that. It's like a big mix of all that stuff. It doesn't take itself too seriously. I think the art's got a lot of charm to it because it's extremely expressive. And the covers are awesome. They've been taking the Uncle Sal approach of getting... Paul Pope did the cover for this one, yeah. But I've been really enjoying it. It's just a cool story with two very different things going on at the same time, and it's kind of amazing that they
sold the trade to me, sir.
It kind of amazes me that they didn't. The preview got me interested, but the story is kind of like it, but not like it's a lot of patience. They're not just
throwing it together and
like here we go, like
the typical
like
not like a sitcom, you know. It's not like a
it's not like
set up and then here's all the gags that come from it. It's
and the part with the gods fighting is interesting in the if you liked stuff like Fourth World stuff or Godland, you would like that, but it's also next to this other thing that's going on at the same time, and I've been really impressed by it, and I've been really enjoying it quite a bit. It's only $3.50.
Well, there you go.
It's these steal. Days it's you can say only $3.50.
that's a deal,
and it's a good thing.
New Jersey, did Pirates of Coney Island, did that ever finish?
I don't know if it did or not.
It was seemed to be one of those that kind of hung out there. Which
what was the guy's name on that? Beebe?
Chuck
Beebe? Is it Chuck Beebe?
Chuck Berry?
No,
Chuck Berry. It's got Chuck Berry presents.
You know, because we were talking about series that kind of haven't finished yet.
No, we weren't.
Oh, we were on.
We weren't talking about.
Yeah,
I'm trying to segue here.
He's like a bigamist. He's got this other family. Didn't I take you? Did I take you to the amusement park? It must have been my other children.
Remember when we went and got ice cream? Oh,
that was somebody. Yeah, else.
That was little Jason and David.
I'm sorry. It's my other family.
But a series that has been
want a whole crossover with that group.
A very long time in between issues was Infinite Horizon. We've talked to Jerry Duggan a couple times.
Time he got off his ass and finished this.
Really? Up. It's I was starting to get a little worried because
it's thematically true to the Odyssey.
It took a long time.
Fucking ever for him to get home. It's gonna take forever to get this book. Exactly. That's part of the thematic journey you gotta take.
But this is
it's intentional.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah. But no, this was an Eisner-nominated series. And they had gotten through through three issues, and it's been, what, six, 8 months since that one came out. The fourth issue, the fourth of six, came out, and this is $2.99, so we're trending downward in cost. Yeah. But
I'm going to do a quarter book as our last. You can get this for a quarter.
But Infinite Horizon number 4 by Jerry Duggan and Phil Noto came out this past week. And I would implore you, if you have either not picked up the first three issues, to try and track them down and catch up with number 4, or get the trade, because I'm really enjoying this.
It is coming
out later this year, end of summer, beginning of fall.
Sure,
they already have it solicited. So I got an email from the man himself. He told me yes. He's been known to fib before, but no. If you're not familiar with it, Infinite Horizon is a modern day or near future retelling of Homer's Odyssey. And not that Homer.
It was near future when it began.
Well, actually, you know, when it began, it was
different world.
It was
a different world.
It was,
and I actually have something to say because I did read this issue tonight.
How did you like it?
I liked it just fine. I thought it was dumb, but I don't know if it was the fact that it's been so long since I read the third one, mm-hmm. or the fact that we are sort of living in a different time than when that last issue came out. But this was the first one of the four that felt sort of apparent in what, you know, like, you know, it's a take on the Odyssey. The first three issues didn't feel like it was a take on the Odyssey. Yeah. You know what I mean? It was just a story that was sort of following that, you know, what the Odyssey was.
And he came home and there was a bunch of dudes trying to bang his wife.
but this one, for whatever reason, there were like what felt like kind of surreal moments in the book that kind of had to be there to follow
the Cyclops.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like, but for whatever reason, this issue, it felt like disconnected from the main story. Okay. There were moments in it that like that felt forced a little bit. Like he was trying to make it like the Odyssey, where at first it wasn't like he was trying to make it like the Odyssey. He was just telling a story and it happened to be like the Odyssey.
Yeah.
And now this one felt like, oh, I got to put this in there to sort of reinforce the idea that it's...
You saw the seams a little bit.
A little bit. And like I said, I don't know if it was just because it's been so long since I read the last one or what it was, but for whatever reason, I really didn't get that feeling on the first three. And this one, I was like, oh, I think a lot of it was
trying to get it to the next part of the story. This is the first time in Infinite Horizon where we've had a page that basically says, you know, a year and a half,
right,
you know, passes in you know, a few frames. And it's like, okay, well, he jumped a lot of time to kind of reinforce the long journey.
It's a lot of fan fiction.
But yeah,
it can be written what I
found myself about halfway through here was enjoying the story of his wife back in the United States in this kind of like water war that she's in and providing, you know, fresh water to New York and that kind of stuff. I'm actually enjoying that part of the story as much as maybe more than what's going on in the Middle East, or now they're in Africa as he's trying to make his way back. But no, I thought there were some great scene with the African militant, the kids, the teenagers. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a pretty powerful scene and a little brutal. But I'm glad, more than anything, I'm glad that the book is back and hopefully going to get back on schedule to finish out here, because I think it is going to be a tremendous trade if you haven't started reading it.
Yeah, from like I said, I've really enjoyed it. It was just a small, small complaint. I have to give him shit about something for being so fucking
damn it,
late,
Jerry.
So.
Yeah,
you got an Eisner nominated book here. Oh, and Phil Noto. I'm really starting to gain a much wider appreciation for Phil Noto's art.
Noto.
Yep, I like
Noto's.
You just got Noto'd.
Noto'd.
What's up, buddy? What's your next one?
You got
one?
I got a bunch, but one I liked a lot, they actually sent us the preview copy of it, was Mark Waid's new book from...
Oh, Irredeemable.
Irredeemable.
I read this.
Yeah, you know, I actually read it twice, and I read the there's a nice little piece in the back, which I
that
thought
was really good.
The Grant Morrison piece in the back. I
didn't read that, darn it.
It was awesome.
Yeah, it was, because for one, you know, it was like Grant Morrison sort of. Well, let me talk about the book first. The book
is
It's Mark Waid, art by Peter Krause, colored by Andrew Dalhouse, and lettered by Ed Dukenshire. Irredeemable is about a superhero in a world that is the greatest superhero in this world, and he was part of a team at one point. And as we quickly learn in the story, he is now seemingly he's lost his mind. And he is hunting down and killing all the other superheroes that he was once partnered with, and we don't really know exactly why. We don't know, you know, what's happening, and that's going to come as the story unfolds. But we learn that, you know, he worked with this team of superheroes for a bunch of years, and now he's hunting them down and trying to kill them all. And at one time, he was the world's greatest superhero.
He was the Superman.
They seem to know something of why what's happening, but not exactly. They're even, you know, there's some dark secrets going on. There's some stuff happening, and some of the stuff that it sort of points to is the idea. And in the backup piece, or the text piece in the back by Grant Morrison, he goes into it a little bit more about, you know, because like this character has super hearing, he can hear everything, and he experiences things. You know, if he's standing in a crowd of people, he can pretty much hear what everyone's saying. And over years and years and years, he sort of has gotten tired of people complaining about how he has saved the world.
You're not doing it right.
Exactly. And I mean, it's very much, you know, a look at the internet and how it's constantly, you know, complaining about comic books, say.
That's not my Superman.
Exactly. And that sort of is one of the things that seems to set this character off after years and years and years of hearing these people complain about, you know, him saving people's lives or, you know, criticizing him fairly or unfairly or, you know, whatever. It's started to sort of change his perspective on things. And that seems to have, you know, sort of set him down this path that he's now, we see him now. So this, I think, I you know, from what I gathered, the story is going to be told a lot in flashbacks. We're going to find out
what pushed him over the edge.
Yeah, what is combined to turn him into now a killer? And in the back, in the Grant Morrison piece in the back, Morrison starts off by talking about an article that he and Mark Waid had both read about
patterning,
and how once someone basically sets their mind on who you are or what you're about, it's virtually impossible to change their minds. No matter what you do. And his point was that, you know, you may think what Mark Waid, you know, what Mark Waid's all about. Most people relate him to sort of Silver Age, you know, kind of stuff.
I did read that.
And this book is going to sort of, you know, change that. It's going to smash the ideas of what Mark Waid writes. But what I found interesting about the Morrison thing was like he's like, no matter how hard I try, no matter how well plotted my scripts are, no matter, you know, how tight, I dialogue things, you know, when I'm dead, people will just, you know, always consider me
crazy, whacked out,
incomprehensible Morrison. No matter what I do, it doesn't matter. Which I really thought was sort of interesting that he has that perspective of people, you know, perceive a lot of his work that way. Yeah, what they say about it. And that's sort of what this book is a lot of about, is like, you know, when you see things, when you see enough or you hear enough about yourself, how does it change you, whether you want it to or not?
I read this. My only criticism, I thought it was okay. The thing that sort of didn't turn me off of it, but your description of it, I think, is better than how they did it in the book.
How it came through in the
book, I think it's a little weighed too heavily towards bad Superman story. Not bad, like, oh, this is like bad, terrible, but like, what if Superman was
evil,
bad?
Yeah, evil.
And Superman. I think for me, it was a little too much of that. And I was at times I was just like, oh, man, I've kind Not that I'm like, Mr. Oh, I've read every single type of Superman got bad story.
No, I know,
like,
exactly what you're saying.
But it's like, oh, okay.
Sick of sort of seeing that over and over again of like...
And the thing I did find intriguing was the why he was that way. And I think the balance of the story was a little bit off in that it was a little too much of Superman chasing
superheroes
around. And it was kind of like, oh, you know, I've kind of read this.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I've read Warren Ellis books. You know?
No. I absolutely agree. I think that this first issue especially could have been done better in that sense of giving you the idea of there's a reason why he's changed, and here's a glimpse at it. Wade kind of does it a little bit in this first issue, but it's subtle, and it's like you said, it's sort of unbalanced. It's like 80% of the book is this guy's evil and fucked up, and like, you know, 10% of it is, well, here's maybe an idea of why, but he doesn't really get into it very much.
I'm going to give it another couple issues, because if he goes back and does tell...
Well, that's what I'm really hoping. Yeah. I'm really hoping that now, okay, we have the setup of this guy's bad and he's hunting people down.
Now explain the background.
Now explain why, because, I mean, he says that, well, Morrison says it in the piece more than that. I think the Morrison piece explained it more so than the book did.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, that was one of the things that sort of bothered me a little bit about it.
I'm sitting here going, well, if that's the case, if that's what happens, if that's what he's going to do with this, of going from here's a guy that was the world's greatest hero and now he's evil, and you're going to show me how he got there, then I'm going to read that. Yeah. I don't just want to see a superhero
how
going
they
around.
Beat him.
Superman.
Yeah, yeah. Or how he kills a bunch of other superheroes.
Just watch Superman chase Batman around for
I don't want to see that again. I've seen enough of that of superheroes gone evil or crazy. I don't need to see that so much. Show me the interesting way of why he got there. And Wade, even in the very back of the book, if you go, T has a little letter in the back too, and he goes into it there. He talks about it a bit too, of like what he wanted to do with this. And he says, no one simply turns evil in one day. Villainy isn't a light switch. The road to darkness is filled with moments of betrayal, of loss, of disappointment, and of superhuman weakness. In the case of the Platonian, who is this character, there were sidekicks who sold his secrets, there were friends who preyed too often on his selflessness, and enemies who showed him unsettling truths about himself, and those were the good days. So, I mean, if that's what he's going to show, in this book, I want to read that, definitely. But I do absolutely agree with you that this first issue probably didn't set it up as well. Like you said, you know, the writing in the back set it up better.
Than the actual story issue did. Yeah. But I'm intrigued.
I think he was probably, you know, probably torn on that, because it's like, okay, you're going to come out with an indie title superhero book.
You got to
kick some ass and get people's attention.
Yeah.
I hope now that he's done that, I hope he shows the what
I've
I
seen some
see.
Good reactions to it. So hopefully his plan worked out and we get a little bit more of the more interesting stuff. Yeah. At least to me.
I was telling Sal that I felt
it's $3.99 now.
Yeah,
fuckers.
I felt a lot of Rising Stars influence on it.
Yeah, I can see that. So. Have we reviewed a book that wasn't? What was the cheapest book we talked about?
$2.99.
Oh yeah, Dead Romeo. $2.99.
Dead Romeo is a steal. $2.99.
So is Infinite Horizon. All right, well, guys, let's wrap up our comic talk and talk with one of our favorite comic book creators about a reissue of one of his books. We're joined now by Mr. Andy Parks. Andy, how you doing?
I'm good, sir. How are you guys doing?
Good, good.
Fantastic.
Who all is on the show tonight? It's such a rotation. I need to know who's there.
No, it's just the regular trio. It's me.
Power
and
trio. Call it the power trio, Chris.
Wow.
Yeah. Refer to power.
No Sentris. No Norton. No nobody.
No.
Sentris is somewhere.
He's lurking around.
He's wandering
somewhere in the complex.
Hi, Andy. Oh, all right.
He's yelling
at you. I get the picture. You say you started dialing me, and he stood up, walked away.
Pretty much. Yeah, he's like, oh, yeah, oh, you can talk to Andy. I think is what he said. So
he's doing his cavalcade of Suntress show over in the corner, where he's 80 different voices.
Yeah, he's over in the corner doing some Bendis tapes, I think.
Do you know what Grover Cleveland sounded like?
How's Tom looking this week?
Good. He doesn't look nearly as homeless. He actually got a haircut. The beard is trimmed.
I dropped the beard trimmer down a notch, tighten it up a bit,
nice.
Down to a three.
Cleaning nice. Things up.
I saw Chris Somni a week ago. He's wearing a beard that looks like a handful of pubic hair. It's disgusting.
Very nice.
So Chris should not have facial hair.
No.
He's just trying to look older. He looks like 12, so he just wants to try and look 16 so he can drive.
Right. It's the only way his wife can carry him around as a husband without getting arrested.
Yeah, does Chris still get, does he get still get carded?
Probably. He won't go anywhere where they serve drinks, so who knows?
That's true.
It's true. Well, Mr. Parks, good to hear that that Union Station is getting an all-new printing. When can we expect to see that in finer bookstores and comic shops?
Any bookstore, even the bad ones.
Bad books.
It's in previews now, page 281, not like I paid attention. And it comes out, sometime in June. I don't have an exact release date, but it's June. And the point of all that is that, one, it's out of print, and two, there's going to be a movie studio spending millions of dollars promoting a gangster movie this summer, so We thought, what the heck, it couldn't hurt to have a gangster graphic novel in bookstores at the same time.
Well, that's what, Public Enemies? Is that it?
Yeah.
Right. That was a Michael Mann movie, Public Enemies.
Yeah, that was filmed here in Chicago. I was actually, my wife works about a half a block from where they were. She works
it was
like
also it, filmed in Columbus, Wisconsin. Well,
oh, that's right. no, my wife works about a block from the Biograph.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, which is pretty swizzy. You get to see the little knot hole where he got killed. And
the Biograph's not there anymore, though, right?
Oh, yeah, Biograph's still there.
Is it still there?
Yeah, sure.
I thought they tore it down. No, I'm thinking of the, what was the other place?
You're thinking of the peep show you used to go to.
Oh, yeah, that was it. Damn it.
Well, I had one of my most fond weekends last year. I was able to come down to Kansas City and visit you, and you were kind enough to take me around.
Did you know he was coming?
Hello, Andy, are you home? Hello?
Andy?
I'm here. Andy!
I would have hit, but I was out in the yard at the time.
But I was lucky enough to have you kind of take me around Kansas City, and you showed me a lot of the places in KC where the events of Union Station, you took me to Union Station, we got to see a little bit of that. So it was, one of the things I took away from my visit is how much you love Kansas City and the history of Kansas and Kansas City, and I think this is reflected really well in Union Station. So for folks that may be interested or haven't read Union Station, what's the basic breakdown of the graphic novel?
Well, we get rid of the crime itself, the Union Station massacre, the really famous event that the book is centered on. We get rid of that in the first act, and basically that involves a guy who'd been on the lam from Leavenworth for a couple years hiding out, and this is before the FBI had legal rights to do interstate arrests and carry weapons across state lines and all that. So they got a tip that this guy was hiding out in Arkansas, and they had to go down and basically kidnap him because they didn't have any legal authority to grab the guy. His name is Frank Nash, and they were trying to take him back to Leavenworth. Unfortunately, the whole underworld of Kansas City got wind of how they were going to make that trip, and so when he came through Union Station and bright and early on a Saturday morning in 1933, some of his buddies were waiting there and tried to spring him. And that didn't go very well. He ended up dead along with two FBI agents, two Kansas City policemen, and an Oklahoma sheriff. And all this happened in broad daylight, very packed station, and then the shooters got away. And so my book mainly deals with the aftermath of that. And it turned out to be a very pivotal case in the history of U.S. legal system, because Hoover, at the time running a kind of fledgling FBI, maybe on the verge of being shut down, said to Congress, guys, this is horrible. We got, you know, people being shot dead in the broad daylight here at this public place. I can put a stop to this, but I need a lot more power. Within 2 years after the massacre, they passed 9 new federal laws and gave Hoover all the power he needed, and he continued to kind of abuse that power for the next 40 years, but it's kind of set the stage for a changing in the way U.S. legal system is handled.
Wait, you mean a politician used fear to pass laws to gain more power?
You know what? That was really the main theme of my book. I wrote it shortly after 9/11 and all that stuff, at a time when I felt like we were on the verge of handing away a lot of our basic liberties out of fear. And so I saw a lot of parallels there. And I don't really drive that home in the book, but I think it's there if you want to see it, that idea that just because something horrific happens doesn't mean we should let go of what really makes us America and what we should be proud of.
No, absolutely. And I mean, Union Station was the first book you wrote, right?
It was my first graphic novel. The only thing I'd written before that was the Uncle Slam stuff, which was
okay.
A couple 8-pagers for my buddy Mike Manley, and then I did 2 issues of the Uncle Slam comic. That's a very different tone, obviously. That stuff is kind of goofy.
Well, I'm really glad that it's coming back around, and I had no idea that it was out of print, or that it was.
Yeah, you told people to buy it last week. That doesn't mean no good. It's out of print.
I had no idea. I really didn't know that.
They can't.
I was trying to help. I didn't know.
No, I appreciate that. But it'll really help if they tell their retailer to get them one in June. That'll be good.
Well, we'll do that. We'll do that. We'll tell people to definitely do that.
It's going to be a little bit different, the edition. The art and the story are going to be the same. It's still going to have the footnotes and the bibliography. But I'm going to write a new intro, and it's going to have a new cover by Eduardo that is going to feature a guy shooting a gun at you, so you make it clear on the bookstore shelves that this is a gangster graphic novel.
I was going to say, it's not going to be the picture of you and me outside of Union Station.
I pushed for that. They wouldn't buy it.
Dang.
We cannot put this on a cover of a book that we want to sell to anybody.
Well, Union Station...
If you had a fedora, maybe, but no.
That was the first book that I picked up of yours that... And I remember, it was funny, because I don't think I really... We knew each other then. I had picked up at a con, at Wizard World, I think. Right. And then... I emailed you shortly after I read it about some of the stuff, the footnotes, because the footnotes I found fascinating in the back of the book. Some of the stuff that was in there that I had no idea about, and went through those, and then I emailed you a few things, and that's sort of how I got to know you.
I remember that. I responded to you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah, you did. Yeah,
I remember that.
We went back and forth a little bit. Yeah, but that was before we had done the show and everything else, but... Right. But no, I'm glad. I'm definitely glad that it's coming back, and yeah, people should certainly order it, and Capote in Kansas, because they're both fantastic works. And I was being completely honest last week when I said I really want to see you do more writing. So anything.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And it's good. I haven't had a graphic novel out in a while, so it's good to have this thing coming back. And then I'm working hard on the South American kidnapping thing that's called Ciudad. That's going to be from Oni Press, and that'll be out. I don't know. It depends on how fast the artist we get will be, but end of the year, something like that. So
we
have a couple things in the pipeline again.
Cool. Are you finishing up the script on Ciudad, right?
I'm almost exactly halfway through it now.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
And we're trying to land an artist. We had a couple artists fall through, so we think we got somebody now, but we're not positive.
Now, that book is going to be based on a film, right, that's coming out?
Kind of. It's kind of complicated. The way that story happened... A couple directors had this kind of nugget of an idea about a kidnapping in this specific place in South America, this really corrupt little place. And they came to Oni with it. And Oni hooked me up with them, and we kind of developed it together. We bashed out an outline together. And at that point, it got optioned by Paramount. And then they went off to write the screenplay, and I went off to write the book, kind of independently and simultaneously.
It's an interesting way to do it.
Yeah. And it's cool for me because I didn't really want to adapt something that was completely written. That's a little too constricting. I wanted to work on an outline that we could all agree on and then go off and make my book. And that's cool because we both get to take advantage of the best things about our respective mediums that way, but still have the basic structure that we kind of all hashed out together.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a lot of times those adaptations just don't work real well anyway because of the restrictions in them, and trying to follow what the movie may be or may not be, and they just tend to not work all that well. Where this way, you just sort of take the core idea and
which is usually what happens anyway.
Yeah. So.
I was talking about that on my blog the other day. I just wrote a sequence that in the outline is a pretty extensive car chase. And I think car chases are really cool and work well in film and don't work especially well in comics. So So I'm kind of minimizing that scene to a couple pages. In the film, it may be a big chunk of the middle part of the film, because it'll be an exciting sequence. So they can emphasize that, that works well in their medium, and I can de-emphasize that and get back to the stuff that works better for comics, I think.
Yeah. Cool. Some of my favorite stuff that, that you've done here of late writing is your work with Daredevil. Any chance we might see some more stories of the tarantula, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I pitched a third one after that, and they said they had plans with him. So, yeah, I don't know. I haven't talked to those guys in a while. I should probably throw something out there again. It's good you mentioned it. I should throw it out there and see if anything lands.
Because I really enjoyed that, and it was great to see. It was what you and Chris Somni had worked on the annual, right?
Yeah, we basically did like two annuals. I think they realized the second one was coming out 6 months later, and they called it something else, a special or something. But yeah, the second one was with Chris. That was great.
Yeah, it was great to see you guys working on a Marvel book together. So
right.
All right. Well, Andy, we need to wrap this one up, but it is always good to talk with you, and you know that you are always welcome to drop by in person or on phone. It's always good to catch up with you, man.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it, guys.
Oh, one last thing. What do you think about the Cutler move to Chicago?
I don't.
Come on.
It doesn't look good. It doesn't look good for the Bears to me. It looks like a lot to give up for, you know, kind of a whining little crybaby bitch.
Andy, when was the last time the Bears actually had a first round draft pick that worked out?
Well, that's true. How much is that first round pick if the Bears are going to be using it?
Yeah, exactly. Hey, and he's out of your division now, so you don't have to worry about him in KC.
Yeah, right.
So. All right, well, good sir. It's always a pleasure talking with you, and we'll be in touch again soon.
And don't get high hopes for those Royals. That first series didn't mean shit.
Believe me, we came back to earth today against the Yankees.
Oh, did you guys? Yeah.
Your leadoff man's name is Coco. I mean, come on. All right,
good talking to you guys.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
Bye, Andy.
Right, take care, man.
All right, bye, bye, Andy. This portion of Around Comics is brought to you by Shigori Death Frenzy. The crowd howls for blood as two damaged warriors sacrifice flesh and bone in a perverse test of wills. Two legendary samurai share a long and violent past. Bitter rivals from the moment they locked eyes, these warriors inflicted wounds on each other that would have destroyed lesser men. As the final chapter of their saga unfolds, they must summon the strength for one last battle. A battle only one will survive. Take home the Blu-ray or DVD on March 31st. That's Shigori Death Frenzy. The beauty is in the kill.
We'll come on a little closer, let me see your face. Yeah, come on a little closer by the front of the stage. I say, come on a little closer, I got something to say. Yeah, come on a little closer, wanna see your face. You see, I met a devil in Buena Buena. Since I met the devil, I've been the same, oh no. And I feel alright now, I have to tell you. I think it's time for me to finally introduce you to the point of point of point of point of good, good, good.
Always good to hear from Mr. Andy Park.
Mr. Andy, that was funny. I mean, it was kind of funny that I, you know, asked people to buy that. I had no idea that book was out of stock or, you know, out of print, and you know, didn't
you asked them to do something they
couldn't do. Well, they can do it now. Pre-order the damn thing.
Yes, go get Union Station if you like historical fiction or what. But it's embellished. It's true fiction, right? Is that what you call it?
Yeah, it's
triction.
It's triction. Triction is, I think, Andy.
Or fuction.
Oh, what?
Come on.
Tom. Really?
Is that necessary? Your minds out of the gutter. It's fuction.
Fuction.
Well, I tell you what, you want to get this one wrapped up here?
Oh, are we done already? We didn't even do. We didn't.
You want?
Do
you want to do a voicemail?
We didn't do emails. We didn't do anything.
I tell you what. Let's.
What are we at? An hour? We at? We're like 40 minutes.
We're about an hour ten. Over an hour. Ten.
That's short.
That's. I tell you what. Let's do a voicemail. And if you do want to, if you want to call the show, you can do so at 1-888-997-5903. And here we go.
Hello, Ron Comics.
Oh, people. I can hear it.
Just to give you an idea where we're at, this is the third time I've tried to do this and without fucking up saying around comics, which is only two words, they're only small, but yeah. There we go. It's Richard from Wales or Blue Meanie or...
What's Blue Meanie? Oh, okay.
I haven't bugged you guys with a dumb question in a while, so I thought I'd throw one at you. But basically, this has come from hearing all the podcast lot going on about the conventions you guys all go to and how they have podcast arenas, which... I don't know, are they cool? Because the concept of it sounds a bit like, you know, they're all sat there. It's kind of like fucking puppies in a pet shop window going like, you know, love me, pay me attention.
Exactly.
That's exactly what it's
I'm
like.
Sure it's way, way better than that, but, you know, it's serious, sounds a little creepy. But
not better.
Taking that the next step then, you're thinking if it's podcast arenas, I had the thought, well, to ask you the question, if it was a fight to the death, right? You got a podcast arena... so there's you in one corner. We'll stick 11 o'clock comics in another one.
Dead.
Comic book queers in another one because I think they're.
Come on.
I don't want to say the word hard. It's gonna like make the jokes too easy. But I think they can take care of themselves.
No.
I was gonna say CGS near the corner, but the wife told me off of that one. So fuck it.
CGS is all tight. So, they're all tiny.
If that's deathmatch, who would win?
All right, wait. Let's pause the voicemail there and let's answer the question because. It's if there was a podcast death match.
Us,
11 o'clock comics. I guess. Well, he even addresses. Hold on, he addresses that problem.
See, I realize that Mr. Niesman is all over the fucking internet and is on around comics and 11 o'clock comics. So I suppose you'd have to split him. But then it would, you know, to be fair, you would get the sensible Netflix pimping Christopher Niesman, and they'd get the crazy drunk fucker.
Oh well, that's good for us.
The bottle. So yeah, so that's my stupid question and.
Okay, so
do I get a break a whiskey bottle if I'm with you?
Okay, first of all,
Tom and I would pretty much destroy
CGS. If you, I don't want to say that there's a lot of them are short, but
they're not like little people, but
no,
they're
but
maybe 3 inches away from legally.
I mean, yeah.
On their, you know,
I don't know if you've seen Sal and I. I'm a tall guy.
You're
I'm a big guy. I can take care of myself. And 11 o'clock.
Well, Vince is a pacifist.
Vince is a pacifist.
So I mean, that would he's not going to do anything. Wood
will do it if you give him $50. He'll fight for you.
Wood will be off on the side taking side bets.
Yeah, I don't, and David's he's a Jew. He's not going to fight.
Don't mess with the Jew.
No, he's not. David,
you won't get involved.
Come on,
and you'll be
and you
the drunk
you'll be drunk.
Yeah. I'll be drunk.
So that's
comic
not even
queers,
a kind
of athletic, fast.
They're in better shape than us. That's no question about that.
Yeah,
but I don't know that they're much of fighters.
Well, I don't know. See, you have to be careful with that because it's you get enough fights in your life and you get kind of scrappy and Steve.
Yeah, bullshit.
I think he's had to. I think he's had to. You know, put a person down.
I'll take on any comic book podcaster. I've said this before. I've thrown the challenge out there. I will fight. to make it fair. I mean, we could do it in a ring, gloves. I don't want to seriously hurt anyone for life. But I'll fight any fucking comic book podcaster out there. I don't give a shit
for life.
Come on, let's
I'll
go.
I'll hurt you for two.
No. I don't want to permanently damage anyone. But
let's get you
come
in
on.
The ring and let's. Let's fight.
I mean, I
take the deafening silence we've heard since then. Just to,
I haven't heard. I haven't heard anyone come back.
No one's one. No
willing
one wants to fight you.
So, I think
you heard it here first.
Way to stir the pot, meanie.
Hey, all right. Listen to the rest of his voicemail. It's pretty good. Pretty good. So here we go.
Now, as is traditional, whenever I drunkenly send fucking dopey shit to podcasts, I will get the wife to sign off.
Hello, I'm very sorry that he's quite so wankered, actually. Can I say wankered? I can now.
You'd have to translate it.
Hammered, trashed, face down. No? Okay, I'm not going to carry on
with
that one.
You want me to put my face down where?
No, shut up. Okay. I've got a proper question, actually. Most people normally say...
I can't understand a word they're saying.
Comic, which is really, really, really boring. I want to know if there was, like, a big tsunami that wiped everybody off the face of the planet, which comic writer would you choose to stay on the Earth to carry on writing comics?
Alan Moore.
Who'd read it?
Oh, fuck off. Sorry.
These people talk in absolutes, don't they?
No, I've shut up. I'm going to... violence. Was that done enough? We'll go now. Bye.
I'm sorry. Bye-bye.
That's great.
Well, thanks to Blue Meanie and his wife for...
Liz, listen to a Comic Racks. She's,
Comic Racks?
She's part of the Comic Racks crew.
Tsunami wipes out every comic book writer except one that you have to spend the rest of your time with.
Alan Moore?
All right, Chris, we know.
Yeah, we know Chris.
Thanks for making me not say it.
I,
Johns? Chef Johns?
No, I was trying to. Not pick Jeff Johns.
Why are you Dennis?
Maybe Grant Morrison, because it would be entertaining.
It'd be interesting. Yeah, yeah.
Just sure. You and Grant Morrison.
Just
alone.
You on a fucking island somewhere. Oh my god! If he didn't kill you and eat you, or like wear your skin,
it'd be a fight. It'd be some sort of battle. Yeah.
You had to sleep with one eye open, I think, the whole time. Yeah. Mine would be Alan Moore, because I would just. And make him write.
You could climb inside his beard.
Alan, there's no one left to see. Just start writing superhero comics.
Watch Watchmen 2.
Can you write Watchmen 2?
Hey, Alan, what happens after the watch?
No more porn, please. Just write superhero comics. Can you just write me some superhero comics?
I'm happy with
please.
League.
And then there'd be Chris and Greg Rucka.
Well, I'm actually worried about that because Greg is a little bit of a survivalist, I think. And so there would be.
Oh, he'd kill you.
Where you like, yeah. Chris, I'm going to have to kill you. And
I need your skin to stay warm.
I imagine.
He'd cut you like a tauntaun. And
here's the scene I imagine.
And crawl inside you.
Here's the scene I imagine in my head. Late at night, 2 in the morning. Greg feverishly digging up the gorp he buried several days ago to eat on. But he hears a rustling, and he looks over, and there's Chris just staring at him. Oh, I see you're awake, Greg. I've been watching you all night. Baseball cap.
Do you know your
jersey?
You know you're very...
You're a very light sleeper, Greg. A very light sleeper.
But I enjoy watching you.
Stop it!
The rhythmic breathing. The rhythm of your chest moving up
now
and down.
Now that music's gone, it's the only thing I can listen to.
Terrible. Thank you for the voicemail, guys. Once again, 1-888-997-5903.
We don't want to hear another one? One more.
Let's
see what this one is. I don't even know what this one is.
You suck. Someone taking you up.
What's up, fellas? This is Fester from Lansing, Michigan. And I'll suck your dick for some cutting.
No, not
crackle.
This guy again.
Shit. Take me to the fourth world. I'll take your penis to the fifth world.
Again?
You guys rock. I love the Green Lanterns.
No, I think that...
You broke character at the end.
I like that. You don't like what?
I think that was the old one. That was the old voicemail.
What's your problem? You're ripping
that one.
On our voicemail, guys?
I'm a little... That makes me a little uncomfortable.
What?
The whole suck your dick for
Yeah, a little...
Kirby
why?
Grant.
A little uncomfortable.
Oh, come on.
I'm...
What?
I'm a little
Get over
prudish.
It.
I'm sorry.
Get over it.
Shut up.
Yeah, come on. It was funny.
Jesus. I love Green Lanterns.
I love the Green Lanterns. That's the part. If that wasn't at the end, then it would be bad. But it makes it uncreepy at the end where you just go, I love the Green Lanterns.
He's just
Thank
kidding
you.
Around. He's
Show's awesome. I love the Green Lanterns.
He's just having fun.
He's having a good time. That's what the show's about.
All right.
Hi, this is Adam from Indianapolis. I was listening to episode 222, The Real Kirby Crackle, and all of you are lamenting about all of your old books, and what are you going to do with all your old books? I have a great solution. This is a Chicago solution too, because there are many locations.
We've already played
what?
This.
We did?
This, yeah, this is
that's the end of the episode. Right. Yeah, this is all bad.
That's,
now we're
that's
just,
the one where his cell phone
done.
I think it's halfpricebooks.com. I think is
yeah. Show over.
So,
show over.
Halfpricebooks.com. And I'm
joking.
Hello, boys. This is Fester from Lansing, Michigan, and I have something of a question.
question, a query for you. Let's say that the Green Lantern title and all its characters related titles were a Marvel book. Blackest Night was happening in the Marvel universe. Which dead superheroes would be coming back as Black Lantern? I don't have any ideas because I just thought of it and I grabbed my phone and called you. So give me some answers. I'm still waiting for some Kermit crackling. Okay, bye.
See, he's perfectly normal.
Yeah.
Jean Grey, Elektra.
Elektra's already back.
Jean Grey will be back to you. Gwen Stacy.
Gwen Stacy.
Oh, and Captain Stacy.
Captain America.
Yes, yeah, Steve Rogers would definitely be a Black Lantern this time around.
One of Wolverine's probably got a dead kid or two. Doesn't he?
Yeah, he's got to have
a couple of dead kids.
Who else
kids.
Is dead? I don't even know who else is dead.
Is Magneto still dead?
He's back.
Black Wolf. Maybe. I don't know.
Has any character ever been anything interesting been driven out of? Come back and forth so many times.
No.
That's my Magneto thing. I used to really like Magneto.
Yeah, me too. He was a cool character.
Black Goliath.
Yeah. He already... they already did it all in Marvel Zombies. They all came back kind of thing, but...
Yeah. Who else is dead?
I don't know. Who else is
dead? Oh, Thunderbird.
Thunderbird? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
Is Count Nefarious still alive?
He pretty much came back, though, Thunderbird.
Yeah, that's true.
But his brother, right?
Yeah, it's his brother. It's called Thunderbird.
Doug that looks just Ramsey. Like
oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Well, is he coming back anyway
in the New Mutants? Yeah. Warlock?
Yeah.
He's coming back.
Doug Locke?
Doug Locke. Who else is even dead? I don't even know
if he's dead anymore.
It would be Jean Grey.
Oh, Captain Marvel, sure.
Captain Marvel.
They brought him back, but he was a Skrull.
Yeah. Didn't really count, I guess.
Yeah.
Is Havoc dead?
No, he's alive.
Okay. Oh yeah,
War Kings
has been very good.
It has been very good.
Lanning, man.
Space opera.
It's actually like an X-Men team I kind of liked.
As
the Starjammers.
I like War Kings. I think it's kick ass to see the Inhumans do something.
Oh hell yeah!
You know,
besides live in the blue area of the
Midwest. Well, they had to get them in outer space, and it's cool, man. They're running the whole Kree Empire,
that's cool.
Man.
That's good. One of my top of the stacks because that's been really good. Real fun.
All right, let's wrap this guy up. Hero Initiative, as always, go check them out, heroinitiative.org, or call 310-909-7809. Give to a great cause. Thanks, everyone, for the iTunes music reviews. You guys are awesome. We're well over 300, but don't stop there. On our way to 400.
The dude that killed Iron Fist.
The kid,
remember? Or not killed Iron Fist, but almost killed Iron Fist.
No. Huh?
Back in the day, the kid that was dying that turned into a superhero and killed Danny Rand.
Oh,
I don't remember his name.
Yeah, I'm sure people will be excited.
Yeah,
I want to thank
I don't know who this guy is.
Master Conrad, Alejandro D, and Ben Rushing for leaving us iTunes music reviews. Thank you a lot. You can drop by our you can drop by our forum at aroundcomics.com. Even though I think are we gonna change things up around
with the forum?
Yeah, aroundcomics.com.
We might. I don't know. We might get rid of the forum and do something else.
So some more network and social networking type. Social...
looking into something else. The forum's been just kind of dead. I mean, there's people that come there, but it's not really doing anything. I mean, we don't really use it all that much. So I was thinking it maybe do something else with it.
Newsletter.
I don't know,
it's going to be a newsletter, right?
No, like a social networking kind of thing, where like you'd have a wall and you could start groups and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it'll be something different.
We'll see. I don't know.
You can follow all of us on Twitter.
I might get bored with that idea.
Remember Windy City Comic Con Saturday, September 19th. You can go to WindyCityComicCon.com, and we have recently added some guests. Robert Atkins, the artist on G.I. Joe.
The guy Wood insulted.
Yeah. Michael Oliveri, writer of Werewolves Call of the Wild. He's got some new projects coming out that he's getting ready to announce. Eric Rose, the artist for The Roberts. And Christopher Mitten, the artist of Wasteland, is going to be back with us this year.
And you can follow both Around Comics and Windy City Comic Con on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
It's Around Comics or Windy City Con.
So there you go.
If you'd like to follow either.
And lots of announcements and updates coming with that in the next few weeks and months. You can listen to Tom versus the Flash as he runs you through the history of the DC Universe one comic at a time.
If he can stay away.
So that's a great way to learn about Barry Allen as Barry Allen is being rebirthed.
Yeah, and no bullshit. There was things that happened in the Flash Rebirth issue that I would not have gotten had like I
puppet,
not
Abracadabra with the puppet.
Yeah, the puppet, Abracadabra with the puppet, and there was another one too.
Oh, Dexter Miles,
yes,
the curator.
Yeah, I wouldn't have gotten that without having had listened to
Tom versus the Flash.
I do it 3 times a week, even though my schedule is crazy. I don't pod fade.
There ain't no pod fade in there.
He's weak ass.
You're going all the way to crisis.
Weak ass podcasters. Blow their wad the first week.
Can't fill it out.
I love the ones
that fill out the suit. 15 minutes, guys. Come on.
Speaking of podcasts, you could check me out on the aforementioned 11 o'clock comics. It's coming out Fridays, I believe, these days. So we had a lengthy discussion this past week. I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today. Andy Parks.
Nobody.
No one receives us.
Yeah. And Mr. Mark Beatty, as always, for hosting us here.
Thank you.
Beautiful Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles.
I wish I had
really kind of snapping the place into shape here. It's getting there.
It's all right.
It's we're building up the trays.
It's okay. Yeah, I wish there was more statues. Maybe
some busts,
more hardcovers,
more busts,
more hardcovers.
I could use more hardcovers.
Hardcovers.
When did the Wolverine Omnibus come out?
Last week. Two weeks ago. So some good stuff in there.
Yeah, I think I have most of it in one format or another.
You need to buy things in multiple formats.
I know. Yeah. Well, believe me, I do.
Come on, man up.
Cowboy up.
Even though I love the Paul Smith, the Cowboy. Iconic Paul Smith drawing there on the side.
You own that, don't you, Chris? You bought the Omnibus, didn't you?
No, I did not.
Yet. Not yet.
You're going to wait till you can get a deal on it.
Well, the Wolverine Omnibus is not going to go out of print. I still need to get the Tomb of Dracula one. That's going to go out of print before the Wolverine one does. Man,
you better get working on that.
We'll
should buy it tonight.
Why are you wasting money on Lone Wolf and Cub $4?
Yeah, what the fuck? Nice.
All right, everyone. I'm trying to expand my knowledge.
Instead of just reinforcing what you already know.
Exactly.
We talked about
There's no fun in that.
All right, folks. Man. Have a wonderful rest of your week and weekend. Path we'll be back again on Monday. Least
resistance, as I've learned this week. It's always about the path of least resistance.
I'm going to find your Zen center.
I'm going to find my Zen center.
Tell me a story I already know. And kill it. Tell me that one. Like, I love hearing the same thing over and over again. That's why I read superhero comics.
There you go. In the meantime...
In between time.
We'll be everywhere in
and around comics.
The real reason I'm a superhero comics is they're all going to be collectibles.
I just buy this.
I do find them relaxing. That is, I did have a pivot.
I relate to
gigantic.
I'm the best at what I do.
What I do.
Fine, don't do it. Don't
interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2009.